Sunday's chase race number 3 at the Monster Mile created some good headlines for tonight's show. That fast lane on radio.dominican.edu starts now.
Like a NASCAR, ice like a superstar, up and down the boulevard. I get cooler, man. You ain't fast like my 3-point shooter, man. 21's on 351 Cougar, man. I get stupid, dumb, diddy dumb. Ice King, baby, and I have plenty fun.
Welcome to week 3 of the Fastlane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and it's week 3. It's gone by so quickly. I can't believe we're already in week 3 of this show, but it's been so much fun. I love just coming in here every week and talking about what I love the most, NASCAR. So chase race number 3 is in the records books, and boy, is it one to talk about. Tonight's show will highlight the current silly season updates. More specifically, Clint Bowyer and Casey Kane's plans for next year. Who's going to do better? We'll talk about that. We, of course, are going to recap Sunday's race at my personal favorite track, Dover. I've been so excited for this race to come around. It's my favorite every year. And then we'll take another drive down pit road. This time, though, we'll talk about the various penalties one could face in a pit stop and what these penalties entail. And, of course, at the end of the show, Alex is going to come in with the results to who's the prettiest NASCAR wife or girlfriend and discuss this week's topic, the cutest baby. So let's get started. Chase race number 3 of the Sprint Cup Series took place at Dover International Raceway in Dover, Delaware, otherwise known as the Monster Mile. This oval track is 1 mile, the Monster Mile, and has very steep bankings, which making it a very curved track, which happens to be one of my favorites. Now, why is this one of my favorites? Dover is something special because, like I just said, the bankings. I love mile-to-mile-and-a-half tracks. Half a miles are fun, too, but my favorite are when it's the intermediate level tracks, which is the mile to mile and a half. And what's different about Dover is most mile to mile and a half, like we said last week, it was Loudon. We were at a mile track, and that was super, super flat, right? That's why it was so hard to pass, and track position was everything because of that. Well, at Dover, their degrees of turns is 24 degrees. That is monstrous. The Monster Mile. It is monstrous to have 24 degrees of turns. And I just love it. Like, if you go and look up what the track looks like or actually look at a clip and watch the cars go around, it's so fun to see because it's kind of like being in, like, a circle, an oval, but it's kind of like a 3D oval and you're, like, running around, like, the insides of it. So it's kind of like you're on the sides the whole entire race. And it's just really fun to see, and the high speeds going into these turns, and it's cool to see how the cars can arc their ways in to get ahead of it. And it's just really fun, and that's why it's one of my favorite tracks. The race itself, the AAA 400, was 400 laps for 400 miles, and with 24 lead changes amongst 13 drivers, and there was 10 cautions. Martin Truex Jr., the driver of the Toyota number 56, was on the pole, and this was his first pole of the season, but it was the second in the past 4 races at Dover. I don't know about Martin. It's something about Martin that Dover, he just clicks there, and whether he is there at the beginning or there at the end, he's won there. He's only had one win in his career, and that was at Dover. So whether he is there at the beginning or there at the end, he's always somewhere in the mix. And this was a surprise. From the past 2 weeks, I've been complaining on and on about how much I can't stand how it's been fuel mileage. This race did not come down to fuel mileage, which for most people who are NASCAR veterans out there will be like, duh, it's Dover. Dover never comes down to fuel mileage. But after the past few weeks, it really just surprised me because you never know what's going to happen. The winner of the race, Kurt Busch. Kurt Busch is not really one of my favorite drivers. Yes, he did win fair and square. I will give him that. But with his personality, I really never think he deserves the win. Just based on personality, though. Based on talent, yes, he's good. But you should see how he treats his team. If he doesn't get what he wants, all he does is yell and swear and complain and act like a big old baby and puts down his team and says how horrible they really are. And, you know, that's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to hear that when you're working around the clock really hard to make this guy have a car that he will like. And then all of a sudden you have to deal with him yelling at you when it's not doesn't come his way. It's not something you really want. And I think as drivers, you all need to respect your crews and the people behind the scenes that are trying to best to give you a car that you can go around and you can win in. And he just really needs to start working on that. One week he is all really down on his team, the next week he's saying the team's the best ever. So he really is just not happy unless he's in victory lane. That's understandable though, because he is a race car driver and race car drivers love to win. But it's hard to see, and it really puts down your team when you do things like that. And he really should probably work on that. But he did win the race. He won, and the reason why he won was he was really good most of the day. He was right up there with Jimmy Johnson and Carl Edwards as the top three of the best. Jimmy led for most of the day, and between him and Carl Edwards, though, they were the class of the field. Jimmy won the most, led the most laps. Carl led the second most laps, and I believe Kurt came in third in the most laps led. Though, here's a difference of what happened. Edwards beat himself. If he sped on pit road, and we'll talk about more about those penalties a little bit later in the show. But if he would not have sped on pit road, then he probably would have won this race. His car was the class of the field, right up there with Jimmy's, and it was the pit road penalty that really put him back. And we'll talk more about that later. And with Jimmy though, he, on the other hand, just got beat. He got straight up beat. I love Jimmy. He did finish second, which is a really good boost for their momentum since they've had two bad weeks. And it's really kind of rare for him to get beaten when he has a car like he did, and especially at Dover. Like I said last week, this is one of his best tracks. But he got beat on one of the final restarts, and Kurt was ready there, was ready for him, and beat him fair and square. And that's how Kurt got that victory. But let's talk about, this is what's funny about Kurt beating Jimmy Johnson. Kurt and Jimmy have pretty much had enough with each other. They are not friends. They're always fighting on the track. They always get in a bunch of little accidents, or really not accidents. They pretty much just go and crash each other. Now, Jimmy, he's a little bit more of the, you know what, I'll take the highway road. But, you know, sometimes he just has enough of it, and he crashed them a couple weeks ago. But it's after probably the past year. Kurt has been they just don't get along. That's the bottom line. And it's really funny that the most funny part of him beating Jimmy was that last year at Bristol, Jimmy won. And the one thing, and he beat Kurt Busch. And the first thing that Kurt said on the pits in pit road during the talks was, anybody but the 48. And that was music to Jimmy's ears. He loved hearing that. He was just like, I am in his head. This is amazing. And I laughed. My family laughed. Anyone that saw this, we're just like, anyone but the 48. And that's what is on the mind of most people. And that was on his mind as well. And so this time, Kurt, you did. You beat him. And now Jimmy's probably saying anybody but the 22. Only because you guys just don't get along very well. But continuing on, this was Kurt's 24th win, and it was his second win this season. And the rest of the top five was Jimmy Johnson coming in second, Carl recovering from his pit road penalty and finishing in third, Casey Kane in fourth, and rounding out the top five was Matt Kenseth. A couple of the little racing tidbits from Dover. This was Kurt's first victory at Dover in 23 races, and it was his eighth top 10 finish. Jimmy posted his 14th top 10 finish in 20 races at Dover, and it was his 19th top 10 finish of 2011. And Carl, who finished third, posted his 11th top 10 finish in 15 races at Dover. And now Kevin Harvick and Carl Edwards are both tied for the points leader. Now, taking a look at the points, Kevin Harvick and Carl Edwards, like I just said, are tied as the leader. They both surpassed Tony, who has won this past 2 weeks. Yes, I have not mentioned Tony yet. Tony had a dismal day. He actually ended up finishing in 25th. And that bad finish dropped him from first to third in the standings in a heartbeat. And Kevin and Carl both had pretty solid days. And they capitalize on Tony's misfortunes, and they're able to take that points lead. Kurt Busch is now in fourth, and he had a big jump of five positions. He's now only nine. He's tied for – it's pretty much tied for third. Both him and Tony are 9 points behind leaders Harvick and Edwards. And Jimmy Johnson, he also had a big – his big day gave him a big jump in the point standings of five positions, and he is only 13 points back. So for all those – and I'll even admit it – those Jimmy doubters, and I doubted him a little bit. He's my favorite, but, you know, I still doubted him. He's still in this. 13 points is nothing. And the biggest fall was taken by Jeff Gordon, who fell four positions down to ninth. And that was due to Jeff's 12th place finish. 12th is a pretty solid finish. It's just when other people capitalize that, and when the more chasers that finish in front of you in the race, the more success there's going to be towards them, and more you're going to falter. So after the break, we're going to talk about silly season and whose season is going to turn out better next year, Casey Kane or Clint Bowyer. This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu, and we'll be right back. Back. This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu, and I'm DJ Ray Ray. Now, before the break, I mentioned that we were going to go and talk about a little silly season. And for those NASCAR newbies out there, y'all probably scrunching those eyebrows and scratching those heads in confusion. What is silly season? Well, silly season is a term used to describe when driver contracts are up and they either move on to a new team or renew their contract. Now, most drivers' contracts are up around the same times, which makes for an interesting end to a season, watching where everyone is trying to go in the next years. In the past few years, though, silly season hasn't really been all too silly. mostly due to the fact that many teams shut down operations or merged together because due to this recession. This year was no different. There has not been much hustle and bustle, but a few drivers have been turning our heads. One would be Carl Edwards. He drives for Roush Fenway Racing. Now, Edwards was weighing out all his options. His contract was up at the end of this year, and he was actually really close to striking a deal with rival team Joe Gibbs Racing, but in the end ended up renewing his contract with Roush Fenway. Now, this is the crazy part. The deal was reportedly worth $40 million. And this is with Ford talking Edwards into signing a deal to stick with Roush Fenway for the rest of his career, which means Carl's done. He has his contract is signed, sealed, delivered. He is a Roush Fenway driver, number 99, for the rest of his career, which is actually pretty good because they really don't have those deals out there anymore because they can come to be so expensive that those deals aren't really seen in NASCAR too often. The one only that's pretty apparent would be Jeff Gordon over at Hendrick Motorsports. He got a deal like that where he's at Hendrick's until he decides he wants to retire. Next in our silly season would be Casey Kane. Now, Casey Kane is news of last year. He drove for Richard Petty Motorsports and then announced his move to Hendrick, but for the 2012 season. So you guys are probably wondering, well, it's 2011. Well, where is he at? Well, he ended up at Red Bull Racing. It is just a small organization. It's a just two-car operation, and it's actually probably closing down its team this year. But, you know, Casey was only there for 1 year, and Mr. Hendrick, who is the owner of Hendrick Motorsports, put this deal together. It's just a 1 year, just so Casey has somewhere to go in the meantime before there is a vacant spot available in 2012. For him to go to Hendrick Motorsports. Now, I will take this a little opportunity to talk about Casey's move to Hendrick. I have been saying for years, ever since I really I saw Casey and I saw kind of the who is over at Hendrick, that this is Casey's probably biggest, biggest fit. That's what the word is. It's probably the best fit for him, and this is mainly due to because he is such a pretty boy. Me and Alex, we talked about a couple weeks ago when we had our discussion on who's the hottest NASCAR driver, and we in the polls all decided Casey Kane because of his pretty boy face. Now, if you take a look at Hendrick drivers, Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Now, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is a little bit rough around the edges, but he has the potential to be pretty boys. But Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, California boys, all pretty boys. Now, Jimmy over the last few years has been trying to roughen up his image. That's why he's wearing this disgusting beard. But before that, they're just all pretty boys. And this is why it would probably be the perfect fit. And Casey's a talented driver, and his styles are similar to ones of a Jimmy Johnson or a Jeff Gordon. So it's going to be a perfect fit. So that means that with the season almost up, Casey is off to Hendrick's come February, which is when the 2012 NASCAR season starts. Now, the last person on our silly season that we're focusing on is Clint Bowyer, and this is brand new. He's expected to make an announcement this Friday at his home track, where we'll be this weekend, Kansas, about making his move from Richard Childress Racing to Michael Waltrip's Racing. Now, the bottom line of this one is, who will do better? Who do you think will do better, Casey Kane or Clint Bowyer? I was reading a couple articles, and I'll take a little excerpts out of them before I give you my own opinion. But off of NASCAR.com's news analyst Bill Kim and David Caravello took part in an article debating just that, and here's what they had to say. So, which driver will be better in 2012 in a new team, Casey Kane or Clint Bowyer? Now, Bill Kim, he took the stance that Casey Kane is going to do better. He believes that since Casey is going to Hendrick, and it's a team that has proven that is a class of its own in the Sprint Cup Series. They have the best equipment, and they have the three most respected drivers in their garage, like I previously mentioned, Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, and Dale Jr. And they all have 9 titles between them. Hendrick is, without question, one of the top teams in NASCAR. Kane also has his crew chief, Kenny Francis, making the move with him, meaning the transition will almost be seamless. Now, Kenny Francis is his crew chief, who has been with them ever since he was over at Richard Petty Motorsports. And even before that, when they were at Everham, they just, bottom line, they've been together forever. So this is going to be so seamless. The pretty much only difference is going to be all this new equipment. So you're not going to expect much changes from Casey Kane, except for getting out of the inferior Red Bull number 4 and sliding into an instant chase contender at Hendrick in the 5 car. Now, Bowyer, for the Bowyer side, that was David Caravella's job, was to debate why Bowyer will do better. Now, in his decision, in his debate, he highlighted on saying that there's no question Hendrick has more cars, more resources, more money. That expectations will be for Bowyer to make the chase. And for Casey Kane, it will be to contend for the championship. On paper, it sounds like a mismatch. And yet, relatively speaking, the ceiling for Bowyer is considerably higher at Michael Waltrip Racing than it is for Kane at Hendrick. The latter will be wedged in among multiple time champions and asked to keep up. The former will have the chance to raise the organization's profile to a new level. If that happens, Bowyer has a better year regardless of what the numbers say. Now, my opinions on this. I feel Casey Kane will have a better season, just like Bill Kim said, but I do see what David Caravella was thinking, that, yes, Casey Kane is going in to a team where he is going to be completely overshadowed. He has Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson, who have 9 titles between the two of them. That is astronomical amounts, and he's going to the number one series, the number one team in the series. So he might be overshadowed a little bit, but also his expectations are going to be much higher because he's going to be in these cars and he's going to be expected to win. And he's going to be expected to win frequently and then go out and contend for the championship, if not win the championship. And it's really high, and that's going to be a lot of pressure. Bowyer, on the other hand, Michael Waltrip Racing is not a very big organization. It's still up and coming. He has teammates in David Ruderman. And I think it'll be good for Bowyer to be at this team because Bowyer is a great racer. And this is going to be a team where he will be the one that'll be shining. He's the one that's going to be getting those top fives, top tens each race. Because even though Michael Waltrip Racing doesn't have the top equipment in the garage, he still has nice equipment. And when you have a racer with the talent of a Clint Bowyer, you're still going to succeed. But in my case, I'm going to go with Casey on this because, yes, Hendrick, there's no competing with Hendrick. Yes, people have tried. People have failed. Hendrick is the top of the class, and when you have the opportunity to race against those kind of people and race with those people, you're gonna excel. And, yes, you could, for those NASCAR veterans out there, you can be like, well, what about Dale Jr. or what about Mark Martin? They have the same equipment, and they're just not succeeding. That is a mystery. But Dale Jr. has had a better year than he has had. They've done a lot of switch-ups. And Mark Martin, he's on his way out. He's already, I think it is, 53, 54. It's time for him to retire. He had a great run, and he was actually very successful there a couple years ago. And it's just, I feel his time's just running out. Not in life, just in the racing series in general. So with that, we just got to look at those comparisons, and pretty much you'll just see that. Well, we'll look at this actually. Kane versus Bowyer in their 2011 Cup Series. So there's been 29 races this season, and both Kane and Bowyer have both gone winless. But pretty much all their stats are nearly identical. Casey Kane has 4 top fives this season, and Bowyer has 3. So, yes, they've had dismal years, but they've had pretty equal years. Casey has had 9 top 10s to Bowyer's 11 top 10s. Casey has 2 poles. Bowyer hasn't gotten any this year, but, you know, poles are pretty hard to come by. And laps led is nearly identical. Casey has led 317 laps this year, and Bowyer has led 320. And the average finish, the average start, actually, Casey has a little bit better of the average start. It's 11.5 to Bowyer's 16.2. And then the average finish is nearly identical as well. Casey has a little bit lower with the 17.8 to Bowyer's 16.6. And in the point standings, the best their ranks were are 17 and 13. And so as you can see, that they're pretty identical. These racers have the same kind of capabilities. They came up around the same kind of the same years. They've all been in the chase before. Boyer has actually been in the chase three times compared to Casey's two times, but they're nearly identical drivers. So when you put them in these kind of vehicles where they have such competition, Hendricks versus Michael Waltrip Racing, anyone would assume that Casey Kane would be will do a better job because he has the he has just all this the better equipment compared to an up and coming Michael Waltrip Racing. Michael Waltrip Racing is still brand new. They only opened up, I think it was about 4 years ago, compared to Hendricks being around for long time. So, you know, they have that veteran to kind of rookie kind of status going. So I think, you know, Clint will warm up to Michael Waltrip. I think it's going to be a great fit for him. But when we talk about the 2012 season, it's going to be, I really feel that it's Casey that's going to succeed. So after the break, we'll get some garage talk in. This week's discussion, what's a pit road penalty and what happened to Carl because of this on Sunday's race. This is the Fast Lane at radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and we'll be right back.
All my waist through my hair. Think about it when you touch me there. Close my eyes, hear you out. All alone, dancing in the dark. Tell me, baby, if it's wrong to let my hands do what they want. Late at night, I pretend we are. Dancing in the dark. Push the start. I got a sex drive to push the start. Push, 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 push the start. Push, 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 push the start. I got a sex drive to push the start. Push the start. All my waist through my hair. Think about it when you touch me there. Close my eyes, hear you out. Dance, 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 dancing in the dark.
Cataracts. Dancing in the dark.
we're back. This is the Fast Lane on radio.dominican.edu. And Carl Edwards dominated Sunday's race, this past Sunday's race, this past weekend, along with Jimmy Johnson. But instead of having to deal with just being beaten by Kurt Busch, Carl himself had to deal with being beaten by himself. What do I mean by this? Carl fell victim to the most one of the most deadly, you could say, or day-ending moves, pit road penalty. So what is a pit road penalty? Well, last week we discussed what a pit stop entails, how you get your four tires, lug nuts, those different adjustments. But now it comes down to the point of penalties, if something goes wrong in the pits, and then what are these penalties? So a pit road penalty is when something goes wrong. When in the rules of NASCAR, there's so many penalties, but probably the most popular ones would be if equipment leaves the pit box. So say the person with the jack, he has a jack in the car, but he doesn't release and take out the jack in time before you speed off. And all of a sudden, here you go driving down pit road, and all of a sudden the jack is still attached to the car. That's a penalty. Say there's like the wrench is still in the back of the car from making an adjustment over there, a wedge adjustment or something like that. There is a penalty. There's also penalties if you pit outside your given stall. For those people who have seen racing or at least seen a racetrack, you can tell there's that pit road and then there's all these pit stalls, usually around 43 because that's pretty much the biggest field out there, and that's what the NASCAR field is. And you'll see these white lines that section each of these pit boxes off. And if you pit outside of that box, not all fours have to be inside, but it's really confusing to tell if you're in or not. But pretty much you have to be in your pit box or have two tires. Your two front tires need to be in the pit box to make a legal stop. And but pretty much for the best pit stop, though, you'll have to – it's good to have all fours in and you're directly in the pit box. Now, making these pit stops can be actually really funny to see because sometimes there's a lot of incidents that happen on pit road and all of a sudden you find yourself getting pitted backwards. And yes, you can get pitted backwards as long as you're in the given box and those four tires are in there, then you are good. But if, say, something happens where you're not and some of those tires are outside the given lines, then that is also a pit a penalty. But that penalty can be easily fixed, but pretty much you just have to stop what you're doing, fix the car, get it into the pit stall, and then finish your stop. Well, that will take up a lot of time and ruins a pit stop for there, but you can mostly easily recover for the most part. Another something that could go wrong is speeding up and down pit lane, and that's the one we're going to talk about, and that's the one Carl got stuck having to deal with. And then also something that you can get caught for is loose lug nuts. And you're probably thinking, how can you tell if there's a loose lug nut or you miss a lug nut? Well, that's what there's officials at pretty much every single stop watching the driver and watching each of the stops to see how it goes. And if they see any of these little things, they will call you on it. They will call the NASCAR officials upstairs in the booth. And those will notify the crew chief, who will notify the driver of whatever penalty they have been given. Now, these penalties are sometimes the crew's fault. Happens, you know. But sometimes it is the driver's fault. And what is a crew's faulty pit stop? And that's mostly when they take their equipment out. But that could also be the driver and also be the crew. It's pretty much when it's equipment, it could be anyone, but mainly it is on the crew if there is equipment left. Now, it could actually be blamed. You can actually blame your crew chief on that one because the crew chief is the one counting you down and telling you when it's ready. They go, 3, 2, 1, go, 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 go. That's how you go. And right when they hear that, the drivers put their foot on the gas and they go. And sometimes the crew chief gets a little too excited, do it a little too early. Now, when they do it a little too early, what happens is that's how you leave with extra materials and extra equipment, and that's how you get faulted on that. But, you know, like I said, sometimes it's the driver's fault. In this case, on Sunday's race for Carl Edwards, it was his fault. So what is the penalty? I know I've been talking on and on about there's these penalties. Now, what do these penalties entail? Well, A green flag penalty is different from a caution flag. So say you're making green flag pick stops, which is when you have to, when there's not enough cautions and you're running low on gas and running low on tires and you need to go in and get your service while the race is still going on, while there's still a green flag in the air. This is probably the this is probably the penalty that will hurt you the most. If you have a penalty doing this when the leader is still out there and the leader is still doing is still running the fast pace, and you get a penalty such as speeding up and down pit road, then what happens is you have to make a pass through penalty, which means you got to come back around into pit road, get down to pit road speed, and pit road speed varies depending on the track. It's usually between 35 miles and 45 miles per hour. And you have to pass through at that slow speed. Now think about going 35 miles per hour down pit road when the rest of the field is going up to speeds up to close to 180 to 200. It's not going to be good, and you're going to lose a lot of positions, and you're probably most likely going to go down a lap. Now there are some tracks where, you know, you get a pass through penalty and, you know, it's horrible and you don't like it and you're upset. But if some of the tracks are so big that all pretty much happens is you get put in the back of the pack, but you don't go a lap down. And that's the good part. You do not want to go a lap down because it's always hard to get that lap back. Sometimes it's easy when people, when there's not very many people on the, that are a lap down, say most of the field, it has not been lapped by the leader. Then, you know, it's okay because the caution comes out. They have something called the lucky dog free pass, which means every caution, whoever is the first car one lap down will be able to get their lap back. Now, when that happens, it's good, and you get, and you're back on the lead lap. But there's some races where people get lapped left and right, and so now you are probably, what, the 10th in line to be get your first lap back, and that means you got to start racing those lap drivers to be the first in line. And so pretty much it's just not a good situation. It's pretty tough to recover from, and that is actually what Carl had to deal with. Now, there's also the penalty when there's a caution flag. So this is when it's the pits are open and pretty much the whole entire field goes in, or sometimes not the whole entire field. But under a caution situation, when you go and you get service and something happens, like I said before, equipment leaves the pit box, you pit outside the given stall, you speed and you enter as you enter or you exit, or there's loose lug nuts, you didn't get all the lug nuts on the wheel, etc. This one's a little bit easier. Their rule is you got to go to the tail end of the longest line. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, we have double file restarts in NASCAR. What they used to actually do is before they had double file, the restarts always were, as you can say, double file. But what happened was it would go in the top. It would usually be all the leaders on the lead lap, and then it'd be all the lap down cars to get to start beside them, right below them in the second lane. That changed a couple years ago, so now it is back to double file. So it's pretty much every restart is just like the start of the race, and so all those lapped cars just are in the back of whatever position they are. So you look at it and you see what the longest line is. Is it the inside line or the outside line? And that is where you restart. And then you got to make your way up the field until you're back into the whatever position you are. But the good part about that one is you don't go a lap down. And that's what the bottom line is. You don't want to go a lap down. So, yeah, you might have to start at the end of the pack, the back of the pack. But as long as you don't go a lap down, it's always pretty – it's pretty easy to – really, depending on the track, you can usually recover. But, again, it just depends on the track if you have a small or big. Or actually, and it even goes down to what lap it is. If you get a speeding penalty with 50 laps to go, good luck. You probably aren't going to make it. But say you do it early, then you're going to have some time. In Carl's case, his speeding penalty was his own fault. He was going too fast down pit road during a green flag pit stop on lap 246 of 400. He went one lap down after doing his pass-through penalty, but he did actually recover to get a third-place finish. You know, it happens to the best of them, and it's a mistake. And, you know, Carl's going to be reliving that mistake for a while now. He's going to be beating himself up because he knows that he probably could have won if he did not make that his own self mistake. He would have won, and... Or he actually even contended for it because he did recover to third. But instead, if he was able to come back to third after having to start, be one lap down, getting your lap back, and then making your way through the field once again. Just imagine if he never even had that penalty in the first place. He probably would have blown Kurt Busch and Jimmy Johnson on that checkered flag, and he would have been the one in victory lane instead of the number 22. But you know what? He's had it before. It's happened before. Not this season, though. This is actually Carl. This is why he hurts even more. This is his first penalty of the whole entire season, which has been 29 races. So, you know, that does kind of hurt. So we're going to take one more break. And then when we come back, it's time to reveal the results of who's the prettiest NASCAR driver or NASCAR driver's wife or girlfriend and talk about this week's topic, who's the cutest baby? This is the Fastlane at radio.dominican.edu, and we'll be right back.
She said life's a lot to think about sometimes when you're living in between the lines, and all of the stars that sparkle and shine every day. He said life's so hard to move in sometimes when it feels like I'm keep driving, trying to find where you belong. I know you feel helpless now, and I know.
We're back to the Fastlane. This is the Fastlane on radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Ray Ray, and here comes in Alex, my friend, come back with the polls of last week. Who's the prettiest NASCAR driver's wife or girlfriend? So how'd that go?
Yes, well, our stats tell us that Connie, who is
Juan Pablo Montoya's wife,
seems to be the prettiest of them all.
Oh, well, she is actually really pretty. We have pictures up of them right now. She's actually extremely pretty, and she does go with Juan Pablo. I guess their faces do kind of mold. Juan's not ugly.
But he ain't pretty.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So who came in second? I'm actually really surprised that Ingrid didn't come in first, because girl's gorgeous.
Well, hold on now, just one moment. Personally, I feel that Connie looks a little bit like Lindsay Lohan's younger sister.
Is that before or after she turned really creepy looking?
All of the above.
I don't know, because that's kind of an insult, because Lindsay Lohan's sister, I mean, she used to be really cute, but now she's like 17. She has that brassy hair and those weird eyebrows, and I'm like, that don't look like her.
All right, well, maybe it was the younger.
Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day.
Reminiscing when she was 14 years old.
Oh, yes.
All right, moving on. So where did Ingrid find a place? Because, ladies and gentlemen, Ingrid, everyone says she's the most prettiest and on and on and on, but our poll said otherwise. So where did she end up?
She ended up in third, right? Third.
Oh, that's a surprise. Who came in second?
Samantha.
Oh, well, Samantha's actually extremely pretty. She looks way too good for her husband, Kyle Busch.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, my. All right.
Well. Yeah, it's not good at all. And but you know what? She's pretty. Maybe it's the inside that counts, right? Maybe he's funny.
Yeah, maybe, but not like.
I mean, he is funny. I mean, kind of, but he does have a bad something about him. You know what? We don't see
like a beer belly.
He's been trying to lose weight, but you know what? We don't see his personality that's not on the camera. So Kyle Busch does have a bad rap. Yes, he has a bad face. Ooh, that would not. That's kind of mean. He doesn't have the best face, but you know what? She found a reason to love him, and you know what? That is what love is all about.
It's probably because he's a NASCAR driver. I hate to break it to you, but it's kind of a perk.
No. We're not thinking like that.
All right.
Well, I like my theory.
Whatever.
Okay. So third was Ingrid.
Yes, Ingrid.
Yeah, you know, I would tie all these girls. Ingrid, Samantha, and Connie, they're all beautiful. Ingrid is gorgeous. Her face molds the best, I feel, with Jeff Gordon, even though she's taller than Jeff, which is kind of weird. But you know what? They're so pretty together, because he's a pretty guy. She's a pretty girl. Works.
Sure. All right. Next, coming in fourth was Lynn.
Lynn is actually, I don't know if I'd call her pretty. I'd call her cute. What do you think?
I'm going to have to agree with you. Do we know how tall she is?
Not very.
All right. Then cute it is.
I think it's cute. And she works with AJ. AJ is also, he's not someone you go, oh my God, he's so hot. He's cute. So cute faces go good. And he's short too. So, you know.
All right.
It works.
Yeah. I mean.
You know, it works. And that's the bottom line, right? And no. We all know what the bottom line is. Personality is the bottom line.
Yeah, we're
not talking about personality. Yeah, anyway. Okay, moving on.
All right. And after Lynn in fifth place came Trisha.
Trisha. So Trisha is Casey Mears' actually his wife. You know, last week we said it was a fiance, and I looked it up and I was wrong. They got married and they kept it really under the radar.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, I know. I was off my game. I was like, I scratched my head on that one. But, you know, she's actually really pretty. Casey Mears, he is not ugly. Let me just tell you that, guy.
No, he is not.
No, he is. He is beautiful.
He is very good looking.
Very. So, you know, it works. It's good. Mm-hmm. And actually, they have a really cute little daughter that we'll talk about in a little bit for our next segment. And she's extremely cute. And
wait, did they have the kid before the marriage?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
That's another story. Oh. So who came? Where does Chandra end up? I always think Chandra, that Jimmy Johnson's wife is gorgeous.
No one
thinks so. And I'm like, okay, yeah, she should gain a little weight. But, you know, she's blonde. She's a model. I think she's pretty.
Chandra actually did not make it on the poll.
What?
Yeah.
How sad.
Yes.
No.
We only actually
Boys, you don't know what pretty is. Y'all don't know what pretty is if Chandra's not on this poll.
Wait, is she the one with the square jaw?
What?
What? Is she the one with the square
jaw? No, she's Jimmy's. She's Jimmy's wife. So maybe I'm a little biased because I love Jimmy. But
well,
I think she's still really pretty. Oh, we got another.
She kind of does look like a Barbie-esque person, but without some of the good qualities. Anyway.
Anyway, so is that the top five? Did we get them all?
There was actually one more that came in the running as the top six.
Oh, what was that?
That would be Kate.
Kate. She's cute. I mean, we talked about it before. I think that's a good place for her. Yeah, definitely not top five compared to the other ones, but I think it works.
Yeah, I think they just, like, they knew she was up there, but not quite, so they put her on the six.
Put them on the six. That sounds good. All right, so that concludes that polling for this week, for last week, which was the results for who's the prettiest NASCAR driver's wife or girlfriend. This week is something new. The cutest babies. I've been waiting for this one. I've been so excited for this because we've been telling you how beautiful these couples are. Now, just imagine when they have a kid. And, you know, first one up, Jeff Gordon's Ella. Okay, she's not a baby anymore. I believe she's two or three. No,
so
three.
Toddler.
Four. She's a toddler now, but she is just so cute. And there's a picture of her with
her baby brother Leo.
They just had the baby last year.
Such a cute newborn.
So cute, right?
Yeah.
Aww. There's not much to describe him. That's why we'll do our poll so you guys know more, but we'll just tell you how cute all these kids are. Yeah. How about Carl and Katie's kid? Now, Carl and Katie actually have two. They actually have two kids. Well, I've noticed with a lot of there's been a baby boom in NASCAR. There's babies every week. They're like, oh, this person's pregnant. Now this person's wife is pregnant. It's just on and on. It's the baby boom. It's just it's something in the water, something in the gas. I don't know. But also comes with this baby boom is a lot of protected parents that don't want to show fans how cute their kids are. And so it was so hard to find all these pictures because they're all being selfish and won't let us see a picture.
Or they're doing it for other protective reasons.
Yada, yada, yada.
Just putting it out there.
But Carl's kid, he has two babies. They're actually born 15 months apart.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I know. And they were only married not even a year before the first one. Yeah, a year. Actually, it was a year before the first one was born.
I think that's okay. A year span, yeah, of good. The marriage.
It was like, it was a year anniversary. And then like the next week or the next month, a couple weeks after, she had her first kid, which is Annie.
Oh my.
And that's the picture of Annie.
You know, cool story. There's some people that I know that actually have their birthday on their parents' anniversary.
That's kind of cool.
What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of cool, but then it kind of depends because you don't want to have, like, it's kind of like having your birthday near Christmas. It's like it always gets overshadowed.
Yeah. You don't know? Like sharing with other holidays.
Never good.
Anyway.
Next is Jimmy Johnson's cute. Oh, she is so cute. Evie. Her name is Genevieve. Not cool with the name. They call her Evie. Her nickname for the first week, actually, it was pretty much the first week, was Little J because they could not think of a name. So they finally settled on Genevieve. Little J, Evie, whatever you want to call her. Girl's so cute.
Normally, you're supposed to come up with a name before the baby comes out.
They didn't. They wanted to fit the name with the personality. So they had a list of all these names when they saw her face, and none of the names clicked. And so they were just kind of scratching their head.
That's what I did with my dog.
You just compared a baby to a dog?
Moving
on. I'm not even going to let you finish that next because we're running out of time a little bit.
Oh,
but
yes, we are.
Next is Elliot Sadler's son, Wyatt. What's the name?
I don't know, but that is one
that's
cute
southern
toddler
name. He is so cute.
He's in a little, in this picture, he's in a little Christmas outfit. Aww, never seen
so
something
cute,
so cute before.
All right, next is Matt Kenseth's kid, Kaylin. Now, Kaylin has a little sister born just a couple months ago. I'm kind of spacing on the name. Ugh. But we're featuring Kaylin.
She, I don't know, fashion emergency a little bit, maybe?
They're from Wisconsin.
Oh, that explains everything.
Casey Mears's little baby girl, Samantha. I talked about her a little bit earlier. She looks cute, right? She's got some chubby cheeks.
She looks squished.
True.
Just putting it out there.
She's anyway. Very cute, though. Next is Ryan Newman's Aww. New kid, Brooklyn. Oh, so cute.
Such a cute child. Such a cute child.
What is up with all these NASCAR drivers having a good, cutest child until we come up on Juan Pablo Montoya. So he has four kids.
Wait, so if that's
Manuela.
Manuela. Okay. Now, heard that one before. I've heard Manuel. Like
or Manuelo. I mean, what's her nickname going to be? Manny?
That's unfortunate.
It is. They're spaced on the name a little bit. But of the four kids, this one just isn't that cute.
Yeah, well.
Maybe she'll grow into her cuteness.
Maybe.
We'll say that. And then rounding up the cutest babies, Sam Hornish Jr.'s Eliza.
It looks like
it reminds me of Eliza Thornberry, just saying, you know.
Yes.
I hated that show.
I did too.
Oh, I hated it.
I mean, like talking to animals.
I mean, who wants to do that? That's Let's leave that for Dr. Dolittle.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That was funny. That one's good.
Yeah, I like that.
Thornberry, sit down.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, anyway.
Okay, well, see, this is a little girl, correct? Okay, what's with the mohawk?
I don't even know. Do you see that? I saw that, and I was like, what is that just random patch of hair?
I just don't know. I don't understand it.
I don't know. All right, so be looking out for us. We'll come around with these pictures this next week and see who you guys think is the cutest baby of NASCAR. We're coming up to the end of our show. Stay tuned for our next show, The Sports Report, with DJ B. He's coming on in a few minutes. And this is The Fast Lane, and it's number 3 of the show.
Yes, it is, Ray.
Next week's going to be 1 month into the show. It's going to be crazy. Oh, wow. I can't believe it's gone by
we
fast.
We should do an anniversary episode.
A 1 month anniversary. Woohoo!
Hoot, hoot.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Peace
this
out.
Is The Fast Lane. I'm DJ Ray Ray. This is Alex, and this is radio.dominican.edu. See you next week.
Bye.
To the sound of a heartbeat pounding away.